After a career in the military, serving as a commander in the Special Forces and receiving many medals and awards, Mark Vargas is in Iraq working for a private military company, Kellogg Brown & Root. In July, he became KBR's head of security in Tikrit. Now he's their security consultant in Baghdad. Kellogg Brown & Root is a subsidiary of Halliburton. On previous shows, we've discussed some of the controversies surrounding the company, but today we just wanted to hear what life is like working for a private contractor in Iraq. Vargas has written the introduction to the new book Hunting Down Saddam, written by Robin Moore. Vargas was based in Tikrit when Saddam Hussein was captured nearby by the 4th Infantry Division. You wrote the introduction to the new book, Hunting Down Saddam. Were you involved in any way with the actual hunt for Saddam Hussein?
No, I wasn't. I was just in the same vicinity of where the capture took place,
and how
working
much,
out of a facility there called the Tikrit Palace.
How much awareness did you have of what was going on? Was it so secret that you didn't really get a wind of it, or did you get a wind of it?
In my capacity as a civilian contractor working in security, I collaborate with the military all the time. If I have information that they could use from some of my workers that are local national Iraqis that are working for us, I share that information with them. Along with that, I attend their, we call them battle update briefs that the military runs every day. And they have these battle update briefs twice a day, and they talk about missions that they have completed and missions to come. And most of the information that's given at these battle update briefs are classified, and the targets that they go after are classified. So you kind of have to read the tea leaves of what they're trying to do. So, yes, I kind of was in the know because I was reading the tea leaves and saying, yeah, I know who they're going after next.
What was the reaction in Tikrit after Saddam Hussein's capture?
Once it was made public, which was the next day when Secretary Bremer released that information, and the Iraqi radio stations started broadcasting it, the Tikritis around Tikrit themselves were elated. They began celebratory fire, shooting their weapons up in the air, which can become dangerous at times. The workers that were working for me at the time were told, and they were smiling. They were very happy and hugging each other, and kept showing us some of the torture marks that Saddam's regime had done to them. So they were very, very happy.
Would you describe your job as Kellogg Brown & Root's security manager in Tikrit?
What I do is I collaborate with the military and make sure that our security is in collusion with each other. I give them information. I give them the weaknesses that we have and ask them for help in certain areas, one being convoy security. We have to travel with a military convoy to protect our civilians. We cannot travel outside of a military installation when we're trying to provide services to the military. We have to travel in a convoy, an armed convoy. That's one of the aspects of my job. The other one is to ensure that our resources that we're providing to the military are protected physically. We provide a certain degree of protection ourselves, and then we expect the military to help us in accordance with a contract. They are to provide force protection for us. So that's kind of the two biggest areas that I work with the military on.
What are the greatest threats? What are the things you've successfully prevented from happening? What are the greatest threats on the horizon?
I believe the greatest threat to the coalition forces, and when I say that coalition forces, that encompasses all the military representatives representing the coalition, to include civilian contractors from each of the countries.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest threat is, again, the failure of the Iraqi democratization, if you will, to show the Iraqi people that were there to help them build, rebuild their country and get them on a road to democracy. And the threat can come in many forms. now, there is a...
Are you saying some of the Iraqis see you as the bad guys when you see yourselves as the good guys and there hasn't been enough work to change their perception? Is that what you're saying?
More or less. One of the things we're trying to do is employ more Iraqis and to get them employed, to get them to start bringing food to their tables and not to see us as somebody that's here to take their oil. And there was a myth, and there still are people believing that. But I think they see above that. And what we have to do as part of the coalition force, we have to show them that we're here to stay, and we're not going to abandon them like we did, like some groups did in Afghanistan. We're here to help them rebuild and see them through the end. We're not here to take their oil.
You spent 22 years in the military. Now you're with a private company in Iraq. Is there anything regulating the kind of weapons you're allowed to use? What kind of weapons can you use as head of security for Kellogg Brown and Root?
Well, most of us do not have weapons. That's why we rely on the military for our protection. Just recently, I switched jobs. I now work out of Baghdad, and one of the capacities I do is oversee the executive protection details for some of our VIPs. And with that, I do get to carry a weapon, but I normally try not to get out there because that's why we have a executive protection detail to go out there and take the risk. So there's only a few of us that really have weapons, and that's more or less for self-protection, not for to be offensive with it like the military would be.
How does post-war Iraq look in Baghdad compared to how it looked in Tikrit?
Well, I think the people of Baghdad are anxious to get back to a normal life, which most of them have never knew. The infrastructure seems to be moving right along. You can see hotels being rebuilt. You can see the power stations up and running to almost 100% capacity, where before, even during the Saddam regime, they were probably at 70% capacity. And I think the people are very excited, but the majority, 70% of them, as was quoted by some news media folks just recently, they want to see change. They want to be able to take control of their own country. You know, they want us out of there. I mean, what country wants a foreign military power inside of it, controlling them as soon as possible? But at the same time, they know that they cannot progress unless they get law and order established and end oppression between some of these groups.
Now, you were in the military for 22 years. Why did you decide to go into a private military company after that?
Well, I saw a lot of opportunity there. Before I retired out of the military, I finished my master's in business management, and I kind of wanted to go into a private company and use some of those skills. And part of it was just the opportunity to continue to work overseas and being in special forces for over 20 years. You get injured a lot. And I've had a fractured ankle from a parachute jump. I've had three knee surgeries. I've been shot in the leg before. I've had a dose of melanoma. A bad shoulder. So, you know, I can go down a laundry list of why, you know, it comes a point in time in somebody's career, hey, it's time to give it up and go do something that's not as risky. But my foot is in my mouth for where I'm working now. But the physical part of it, the physical part of it was part of the decision I made.
You meant your heart is in your mouth, right?
There you go.
Yeah. So the physical issues played a big part in retiring from the military. But a lot of people after that would want to just go to a safe setting, you know, maybe an easy security job in the U.S. or something. You hardly went that route.
Well, you know, I started out working for, we were called Brian Reed back then in 1999, in the Balkans, in Macedonia, and then eventually Bosnia. It was pretty much a safe environment, providing services to the military. And I did that for a year, and after that I worked for the Department of Defense for 3 years as an anti-terrorism officer. And I guess after doing 3 years of that, people know me, they know my reputation in the civilian industry, not just Department of Defense. And, you know, I got quite a few job offers to come back on board, and that's why I'm in Baghdad right now working for KBR, because... You know, people know me, and, you know, they offer me, you know, money has something to do with it, of course. You know, you take risk in life, and one of those risks is your job. But to me, I don't see it as what the media portrays it as. They target Americans, and, you know, all Iraqis are against America. That's not true. There's probably less than 1% out there that are part of these terrorist groups that are part of the insurgency. And part of my natural upbringing through the military was to win the hearts and mind of people, of indigenous people that I would work with in those Middle Eastern countries that I've been to. And I just thought it was a natural thing for me to do, is to go help KBR in Iraq.
What's it like to have been part of the military for so long and now be working closely with the military but not be a part of it?
You know, in the beginning, it was, okay, you have to change your way of thinking somewhat. 50% of the people that are part of most of these civilian contractors are former military, or else they cannot just hit the ground running, so to speak, as mm-hmm. most of us can do. So we understand... what they're going through, we understand their methodologies, and we can bring something to the table when we sign up and work for these civilian contractors, and the military sees it, and you know, they pick our brains and ask us for, you know, ideas to help improve their situation, and you know, we open all the doors, anything they want.
Without asking you to necessarily give specific figures, how does the pay compare with a civilian company versus the military?
Well, I guess your salary, depending on what rank you reached in the military, is almost doubled.
Mm-hmm. That's a powerful incentive.
Yes, yes it is.
My guest is Mark Vargas, a former commander in the Special Forces, who is now working in Baghdad as a security expert for Kellogg Brown & Root. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Mark Vargas, a former commander in the Special Forces, who is now working in Baghdad as a security expert for Kellogg Brown & Root. He wrote the introduction for the new book, Hunting Down Saddam. Who do you answer to? Do you answer to the military or to KBR? And just KBR, do you answer to KBR and do they answer to the military? Like, what's the chain of command like?
That's exactly right. You got it right on the nose. I answer, you know, within my own chain of command and KBR, and the head people answer to the military.
How do you dress? Do you dress in a military uniform or in a military-type uniform so that you have the authoritative look that the uniform provides, or would that make you too much of a target?
Well, we're not allowed to wear uniforms, and that's one of the stipulations of the contract, because we're not combatants.
Right.
We don't consider ourselves combatants, so we wear civilian clothes.
So what do you typically wear?
I can, you know, depending on the occasion, I can wear anything from, you know, a dress slacks to a collared shirt, and all, you know, if I'm going on a detail, sometimes I might wear blue jeans and a t-shirt with a with a vest to hold magazines and things like that.
Is it a bulletproof vest?
Yeah, we all wear bulletproof vests, just like the military does, and helmets when we go outside of the hotel.
I'm going to assume that you would have found it difficult to return to civilian life back home in the United States when you retired from the military, because you've remained in war zones through private companies. What is so hard, after having served in the Special Forces for so long, about the idea of returning to a kind of quiet, safe civilian life in the U.S.?
Well, I had that life. I lived in Coral Springs, Florida, and I was working for United States Southern Command, which is based out of Miami, Florida. Then later I took a job with 5th Corps, which is out of Heidelberg, and I worked there for 3 years. So, you know, the job is all these jobs are analytical. You know, you use your brain more than you use your brawn. And of course, I probably at this point in my life, I like to use my brain more than my brawn, because you know my body is falling apart. But you know, I still find it exciting to be in the know, and to be in the know, you have to be there.
Do you have a family?
Yes, I do.
And are they in the U.S. or in Baghdad?
They're in the U.S.
Do they worry about you a lot?
Of course.
Is it hard to be separated by your work like that?
Yes, it is. It's very hard. You know, I've been married almost 14 years, and my wife has known nothing but Special Forces and deployments and deployment after deployment, and spending, you know, 3 months out of the year at home. And of course, once I retired, I did it for a year, and she wasn't very happy. And I took a job with Department of Defense for the last 3 years, and we had a great life, and we still do. You know, I could take a break any time I want, and it's not like I'm stuck there forever. I can take a break every 4 months or every 2 months and meet her somewhere. But this is not, you know, a career that's going to go on, I can tell you that. It's something that I wanted to do. You know, maybe I'll just do it for a year. My year's up in July,
mm-hmm.
and then I'll go back to a normal life.
Right. So you say.
So I say.
One last question, and this might strike you as a little goofy, but since you've sustained so many injuries in all your years with the Special Forces, how do you deal with pain? Is pain hard for you to deal with? Can you just, like, put that in the background, or is that the kind of thing that that you find very distracting?
Well, I call it herbs and vitamins. That's how I deal with pain. And I think I have more headaches now than I ever had, because I'm using, you know, my brain more than anything else. But
you mean literal headaches?
Literal headaches, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's some of the sulcus is growing. You know, I'm using the left part of my brain more than I ever used it before. So.
And it hurts.
It hurts.
Well, good luck to you, and thank you very much for talking with us.
It was very nice to have this opportunity, Terry. Thank you.
Mark Vargas is a security expert for Kellogg Brown & Root. He's now based in Baghdad. He wrote the introduction to the new book, Hunting Down Saddam, by Robin Moore.